Well, hello everyone and welcome. I am once again coming from home as opposed to the lodge. I'll be here all week. I'm trying to find a good location. I think I've moved around to a different painting now. But anyway, over the past 24 hours, there's been an almighty hullabaloo in the British press saying that once again, Keir Starmer is on the brink. If you follow rightist slop accounts like Basil the Great and every other gobshite on the right, they've spent the past day saying, surely Starmer won't survive this. Surely Starmer will go this time. And I'm here to tell you, basically, that that's not going to happen. That Keir Starmer is, a dogged robot who's just not going to respond to these things. And as I've said all along, he is going to find a way to stay until 2029. I also have developed a theory as to what this is about, as to why they keep on reheating the Mandelson affair, why the right press, the right aligned press, is so hell bent on getting rid of Starmer. And what I think is behind this. But before we get going, and forgive me if I'm looking down, I've got some notes here, and I have to kind of keep an eye on them. But before we get going, I would like to remind everybody to pick up a course at the Academic Agency, Trivium, the bestseller. If you want to have the same kind of incisor-like laser focus on argument on how to cut through all the BS, take Foundations of Logic. If you want how to write as well as I do in my books, you can take Foundations of Writing. And, if you want to know how to do rhetoric, you can take that as well. I'm not going to pretend that I'm that good at rhetoric. although I try. All right. So what is all of this about? Why is it that they keep on coming for Starmer again and again and again? Now, but partly you could frame this as a purely domestic thing, that Starmer is historically unpopular, that he lost a lot of the country over the Southport riots and his handling of that, that all of that is true. But I think something else is going on. And, as someone who's been accustomed to look intently at what's going on, I actually think that, and surprise, surprise, they're always lurking around the corner. It's those darn Zionists again, who've got it in for Starmer. Now, this may come as a surprise, especially to left-wing viewers who tend to, the pro-Palestine crowd, tend to view Starmer as a Zionist himself. They point to the fact, who he's married to and the statements he's made. Starmer has said lots of times, yeah, I am fully committed as a Zionist. I respect the state of Israel, blah, blah, blah. There's friends of Israel in the Labour Party. And of course, when Starmer came to power, he knifed Jeremy Corbyn and purged all of the hardcore prominent critics of Israel in the Labour Party, which kind of, for the left, tells them that Keir Starmer is an enemy. Okay, and the pro-Palestine faction views Keir Starmer as an enemy, which is puts him in a pretty interesting situation because he has no friends. As I'm framing this, the Zionists want him gone. Okay, they don't like him, and the right, because of Southport, hate him. Okay, the left in the country, because of what he did to Jeremy Corbyn, and because of his various statements, they see him as being too soft on Israel, and so he has no friends there either, and yet he remains. And this is where it's going to get a pretty interesting, okay? Now, despite all of these statements and despite his history of these sorts of things, how is it that the hardcore Zionists have turned on Starmer? Why is it, okay? Now, these may not seem significant to you, okay? But they are significant to them. How do I know? Because I've been reading their publications in preparation for this. And this is why I've got these notes that I'm going to go through. Okay. And this also explains why the story of Starmer, is he going to go? Is he on the brink? keeps on coming back. I actually noticed the pattern. I was like, oh, this keeps on happening. I wonder what Starmer did, you know, against Israel to cause each one of these things. Well, back in September 2024, he suspended arms exports to Israel, okay? And this prompted a lot of criticism in the Telegraph, who called him weak on security, in the Daily Express, who called for him to resign even back then, in GB News, who also framed him as being weak on security and things like this. This was framed, this suspension of arms sales to Israel back in September 2024 from all of these outlets as a shameful betrayal of a heroic ally, okay? And it damaged the special relationship between Great Britain and Israel. That's how it was framed back then, okay? What happened actually was a partial suspension of around 30 arms licenses that could have been used in Gaza, okay? Then, so that was September 2024. So we're going back a couple of years. Then in July, in the summer of last year, Starmer kept on kind of intimating that he would recognize the state of Palestine, that he would actually recognize it. And around that time, around summer 2025, there was a huge slew of Starmer is on the brink, okay? Starmer is on the brink. His poll numbers are collapsing. He is the least popular prime minister of all time, okay? Lots and lots of Starmer on the brink headlines around the time where he said, I'm going to recognize Palestine as a state. It was called Starmer's Neville Chamberlain Moment by Spiked Online. The Telegraph described it as a betrayal of Israel. The Jewish Chronicle described it as a betrayal of British Jews. And it was also described as a reward for Hamas in those various different publications. Okay, that was in July of last year, in the summer. And again, there was a lot of activity around this time. Starmer must resign. Starmer must go. Starmer's on the brink. And yet he didn't. And I remember at the time saying, he's not going to go anywhere. You can go back and watch my videos. Then, in November of last year, what Starmer did then is, oh my goodness, what's going on there? Somebody's washing the windows. Okay, all right. I tell you what, I can't win, can I? If I'm at the lodge, I've got somebody doing grass or blowing leaves or something. Now there's a bloke washing the windows here. Wow. Okay. And anyway, it's just quite funny to watch. All right. Then in November of 2025, there was a shift where the UK would no longer routinely veto anti-Israel votes at the UN using their seat at the Security Council. This was a departure with what Britain had done. And again, this coincided, right? This coincided. Now, I know a lot of people will be saying cause and correlation aren't always the same. There could have been something else. But it's very notable that there was a major wave of Starmer must go, Starmer on the brink pieces around the time where this UN vote against, you know, basically, the UN routinely have votes, you know, against Israel. And typically, the US and the UK have, you know, vetoed or they've, you know, they abstained or whatever. And the UK stopped doing that in November. And here there was a wave of stories about there being a toxic culture in Labour. There's going to be an internal prop. Plot. Starmer's on the brink. Again, Telegraph, Express, Spiked Online, all of these same kind of outlets. So routine opposition to anti-Israel UN motions, again framed as, quote, betraying British Jews. Now, I should say that there are organized groups, even within the Labour Party, representing British Jews who argue against this, who are actually more on the pro-Palestine end. It's worth mentioning that. But this is just what was written in the press, okay? What else? You know, this was framed this time in November of last year as it being a kind of omni-shambles. There's chaos in number 10, this sort of thing. The walls are closing in on Keir Starmer. Do you remember how they used to do that to Trump? Now, every couple of months, we get it with Starmer, okay? Now, late December, so a month later last year, into January, and there was a huge, you know, we were told in the betting markets that the odds of Keir Starmer going were massively increased, Starmer on the brink. This was particularly big in the Daily Express, Starmer on the brink, bombshell odds reveal he could quit, William Hill odds were slashed, okay? And, you know, he was seen as a beleaguered prime minister, someone whose time had kind of gone, someone, how long can he survive was the framing in the press, in the Telegraph, in the Express, spiked online, all of these Spectator, all of these outlets that, generally speaking, you could say are Zionist aligned, okay? And then you got the Mandelson affair, okay, which came a major escalation on the Starmer of the brink. Mandelson then was used as Starmer must go, why Starmer's on the brink, GB News, Express, etc. Starmer's fighting for his survival, you know, the writing's on the walls are closing in. And of course, this is interesting because it's like, well, this is a domestic affair. It's really about Mandelson. But let's not forget what the Epstein files were about, that Mandelson himself was a hardcore Zionist, okay? And what was interesting is that they tried to use the Mandelson affair to bring down Starmer, and instead what happened is that he fired the most hardcore pro-Israel person in Labour, which was Morgan McSweeney, and actually used the crisis to, I wouldn't say purge, but to weaken the Zionist faction within Labour, represented by the Blairites, okay? Now, people were pointing to Wes Streeting as a possible, you know, because he's a hardcore Blairite. There are Zionists within Labour, and they tend to be on the Blairite side of the party, okay? But the Mandelson affair has been used, as I mentioned in a piece in Chronicles a while back, and here on the channel, has actually been used to strengthen what you might call the soft left in the party and to weaken the Zionist faction. And getting rid of McSweeney meant that Starmer could be stronger on things like the Iran war. And ironically, since he's got rid of McSweeney, he has been able to take a stronger line on all of these sort of foreign policy issues and drift even further. Okay. And again, this is seen as kind of a betrayal of Israel, a betrayal of you know, the special relationship, and this time not just with Israel but with the United States and Trump. Okay, so you're getting a lot of pressure coming in from the American end as well. But of course, as we know, the American end is also the Zionist end. There's actually no difference between those two things anymore, especially since Trump has come in. Okay, I hope you're following me where I'm going with this, okay? So you can say that, you know, the Mandelson affair, you know, and that was the first big hit when it came out, okay? The major scalp was McSweeney. So Starmer deftly used the crisis, actually, to get rid of people who would become a liability to him, but he survived himself and he didn't step down. Then in March, that was last month, the Mandelson files reheated. And of course, by this time, the Iran war had started and Starmer had taken an anti-war line. He kept on saying, it's not our war, which again was framed by the right press, by the Tory party, by Nigel Farage and all of these other quote unquote friends of Israel in Britain, and all of the press aligned with them, and by GB News, as weak, as not, you know, as letting down America, as destroying that special relationship, the one with America this time, and all of this rhetoric came again. Remember, all of those people would have taken us into the Iran war then. Starmer, Sean of McSweeney, didn't do that. Okay, so clearly, you might say the Zionist grip on the Labour Party is weakened. So they want him gone. They want him gone. Make no mistake, they want Starmer gone. The left, the pro-Palestine faction, also want Starmer gone for different reasons. The right, as in the kind of patriot right, also want him gone for revenge for Southport. Okay, my personal view is actually he's probably the best person in. Ironically, as bad as he's been, I think it's actually good that he's staying at the moment. And I increasingly see kind of anti-Starmer content as slop, basically. It's slop a line. I think it's better for us as a country that he stays there, at least for now, anyway. You know, he can keep us out of this war. He can do his Love Actually thing against Trump, you know, and various other things. What else? Okay, so that was March. And, you know, they kept on drip-feeding the Epstein stuff. Now, the thing is, on the Epstein, if Starmer must go over Mandelson, why is Trump still there? Why does this only affect Keir Starmer? Right? Trump should go. You know, all of those people in, you know, Howard Lutnick, and why aren't all these people gone? And this is the question. Whenever anybody tries to use Mandelson to get rid of Starmer, you need to immediately fire back. If they like Donald Trump, why don't all of those people in the Trump admin, they need to get their comeuppance? Because it's basically the same thing, isn't it? It's all the same story. So then they reheated Mandelson again. So this is like the third time they've reheated the Mandelson affair, you know, to some revelations have come out, you know, he wasn't properly vetted, or, you know, despite this, he was given security clearance, blah, 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 blah. And what was the net result? Starmer sacked Ollie Robbins. Now, Ollie Robbins was a senior civil servant, and he is famous in left-wing circles. You know, if you're like in the Vara Media Watcher or, you know, Aaron Bastani fan or something like that, you'll probably know Ollie Robbins because back in July of 2025, he released the famous missive telling civil servants that if they've got a problem with the government's line on Israel and Gaza, they can go, right? If you've got a problem with our line on Israel, get out, is what Ollie Robbins said, okay? And that leads many left-wingers to suggest that Ollie Robbins is a kind of covert, you know, friend of Israel or Zionist. I couldn't actually verify that beyond, you know, maybe he was just being a Jobsworth. Maybe he was just kind of doing his job as the head of the Foreign Office or whatever. But that is essentially why he's vilified in the pro-Palestine kind of crowd. And it's interesting that yet again, like, let's just pretend that they are correct about Ollie Robbins. Starmer's just used the opportunity to get rid of him, okay? And then he hasn't gone himself. He just refuses to resign. And this is something that a pattern that you can bank on. There's something about Starmer. He's not a normal politician, right? He will go through the barrier. Even if he goes lower than 10%, he doesn't respond to normal human pressure. You know, all of this noise, this is like the sixth time Starmer's on the brink. I wouldn't hold your breath. He's not going out. He'll still be there in 2029, mark my words. There's just nothing that's going to get rid of him. But it's obvious now, it is absolutely obvious now, that the major push to get rid of him is over his serial perceived betrayals of Israel on the arms, on the recognition of the Palestinian state, on the UN votes. Okay, those are three major things. Then on the major one, of course, now, is on his stance on the Iran war, his non-cooperation with Trump, and his rhetoric and so on. Now, I know for many, I guess, people on the anti-Zionist or pro-Palestine side, Starmer does not go far enough, right? He's not Jeremy Corbyn. He's not, you know, McDonald or one of these sorts of characters. But look at his actions. He has consistently kind of been moving in that direction for one reason or another. Maybe it's just pure survival. Maybe it's just Machiavellianism. But Starmer is built differently. He's not like you think, oh, surely the forces, you know, of gravity will kick in. You know, he can't possibly go. Now, we keep on saying over and over again that he's on the brink. He must go. Come on. What's happening? And yet he stubbornly remains. So, yeah, I mean, I've noticed the pattern, and I've also noticed the pattern of Starmer completely no-selling. He's like another one of my tortured wrestling analogies, but you can imagine, like, back when The Undertaker was like the dead man, was the, you know, back when he first came in and he was like the big zombie, and people just would punch him and they'd hit him in the face and he'd just be like, he'd be expressionless and all the punches would bounce off him. Starmer's a little bit like that. It's just nothing really gets to him at all. And so we're in a bit of a kind of holding pattern here, because every time they come for him, they think, everybody says the same stuff. Surely he must go this time. Surely he must go this time. And then he doesn't go. Oh. You know, Scrump and Evelyn did an interesting stream recently which I'd recommend you watch, on legitimacy, with Starmer's face on the front. Recommend you go and watch that stream, because Starmer's doing, like, he's doing something really interesting from a purely political point of view, which is he's defying all the normal rules of politics. And yet, in the process of simply being in power, he is, I don't know, like, he's he's in a weird way gained authority through all of this adversity. It's like he's got this ability to use various crises to his advantage. What's particularly interesting about Starmer, though, is that in your kind of YouTube feed, okay, he has no allies, apart from maybe Alistair Campbell, if you watch The Rest Is Politics. Everybody else hates him. The right hates him for the reasons I mentioned. But all the geopolitics channels, like Duran and, you know, I'm trying to think, like all of those other kind of the ones who talk about foreign policy a lot, they don't like him because of his bellicose stance on the Ukraine war and, you know, being like anti-Russian and things like that. So he doesn't even get help from them. There's like the left-wing channels hate him because of what he did to Corbyn and because they perceive him as being pro-Israeli. The kind of Zionist-like crowd see him as having betrayed Israel. So he's a bizarre figure in so much as he pleases nobody. And yet, in a weird way, I still think he's the best man for the job as things stand. You know, I'd certainly take Starmer above Zach Polanski right now. I take him above Kemi Badenoch right now. And I take him above Nigel Farage or Ed Davey right now. I mean, honestly, would you genuinely swap out Starmer for any of those figures right now? I wouldn't. I really wouldn't. So, yeah, this is a very interesting situation. An interesting story. Tell me, let me know what you think of it, and I'll see you next time. And before we go, will I tell you, Iran war yesterday, did anything happen? No. So that's why you should keep on watching me and not any of those other people. Pick up a course at the Academic Agency, and I'll see you all next time. If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the Academic Agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, Logic and Rhetoric, just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.